Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back to another episode of the Talking Calcio Podcast with yours truly, Dr. Crane Nick Frazier, alongside Nashville Total Sports' Claudio Villalobos and broadcaster Tony Husband. We caught up with Tony ahead of Nashville SC's away match at FC Dallas. Here was that conversation.
We couldn't have anybody better, for sure. I mean, at least in my opinion. Tony Husband is with us. We appreciate you coming along, Tony. And, well, I have a question for you, which is personal, but I'll go out after you say hello.
Hey, Claudio, Nick, nice to see you.
Good to see you.
Greetings to Nashville. And, looking forward to the game this weekend. Should be good.
Nick, how are you doing?
I'm fantastic, Claudio. Another week down and getting ready for Nashville SC to take on Dallas. That should be a fun one.
Tony, I have an anecdote of some guy who became one of the biggest announcers in back home in Costa Rica in a very particular way. And I bring him along just to ask you about your own experience. This guy was actually doing some sort of a reporting down in the National Stadium near the field one night. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the game, the lights go off only in the press box. I mean, the game kept going. Everything was good. No audio right there. So the radio station, it was radio at the time, had to figure out what to do because the game was going on and they couldn't. Nobody play by play anymore. So they decided to go down to the guy in the field. He set him up on a ramp and over the locker rooms. They put him up there with the microphone. He started calling the game. Well, that was the first story, and he's gone by now, but he became one of the biggest play by play announcers in Costa Rica's history. What's your story?
That's a good one. I'm not sure mine's quite as good as that. But I tell you what, Claudio, that's a great example of, how you kind of make your own luck sometimes, isn't it? Because, you know, we all get asked in our respective worlds, you know, for advice from young people from time to time. And I say, there's no playbook for it. You have to just, sometimes it'll fall your way. Sometimes it'll mean doing something out of your comfort zone. And it's funny, you know, you were telling the story there, and I was thinking back, though, the one thing is always to learn from your experiences as well, because so you're talking about the lights going out in the press box. And I learned a lesson very early in my career. I can remember the game. I was doing Watford against Southampton. I think it was a League Cup game, EFL Cup game in England. And they did the same in the press. So in England, in the press boxes were just pretty much old stands. The crowd was around you. The teams came out and they turned the lights off in the old wooden stand we were sitting in. And I couldn't see anything of my notes. It was too dark. And so from that day forward, until the advent of our trusty phones, mm-hmm. I carried a torch to every game I went to. And some people used to look at me and go, "Well, you got a torch in your bag. What's the matter with you?" And I used to say, "Well, you know, if it goes dark, I'm shining the torch on my notes." And sure enough, wouldn't you know it, I went to a game a couple of years later. This was Plymouth against Southampton. And just before we went on the air, and I was a radio host then, so I had a 45-minute pregame, then the whole game to host on the radio with one colleague. And there was a power outage in the whole stadium. All the lights in the stadium went out. We were using a piece of broadcasting kit, though, that was connected to the phone lines and powered by battery. So we didn't go off the air, but we couldn't see a thing. So guess what Tony does? Gets in my bag, gets my torch out. There we go.
Ready to go.
You learn from your experiences. The story there of how that guy got his first commentary, and what he went on to do, amazing. I mean, my first, you get a lot of breaks in life. My first radio commentary was because somebody got the flu. So, you know, I was like, I was going to be doing a game at some point, but my game got brought forward because the guy who was going to be doing it got the flu. And then my first ever national TV commentary in the UK was, again, somebody, I was due to be at the game to be a reporter, but I got a phone call as I got out of the shower. And it was a frantic producer saying, the commentator's ill. We need you to do the game. And I'd never done a national television commentary before of a Premier League game. And again, I had no notice. In fact, I'd come back from a vacation the night before. So again, and I just had to take the chance, go for it. So, you know, that's often how it works for all of us in whatever walk of life we do. It's just take the chance if you can.
You got that right, Tony, for sure. You know, obviously we're having you on to preview Dallas and Nashville SC, but you know, I've talked to you in passing, seen you in the press box from time to time. Getting into the world of soccer, obviously it's a part of the culture overseas, but for you, when it came to broadcasting, do you remember your first ever broadcast in your career? And along with it, who inspired you to get into your field?
Well, yeah, I mean, I suppose there's been a few kind of firsts because, like everybody, I went in relatively low down. I can still remember reading my first ever like sports news bulletin, the first time they ever let me on the radio to read the sports news. In fact, I'm sitting here now. I can still feel it. I can still see it. I can remember. So on the radio, you would have the dials, you know, you would push the dial up to open your microphone.
Right.
And I can still remember doing that. I can still remember the guy who walked me to the studio and I sat down behind the desk. I was 21 years of age. And I literally, he said, I'm going to leave you to it now. Are you okay? And I kind of said, yes. Thinking, no, I'm not really. It was also 6:20 in the morning, so it was an early start.
That's
the greatest early in the mornings. So that was my first kind of radio broadcast for sure. In terms of inspiration, that's been easy for me. My grandfather was a sports correspondent for a big national newspaper in the UK called the Daily Telegraph, and he covered every World Cup from 1958 to 1986. He covered the Olympics from, I believe it would have been 60 until 84. His last one was the Los Angeles one. And he also covered the whole era of heavyweight and indeed boxing. But, you know, if you think of those eras, the heavyweight boxers stand out for you. He covered the entire era of Muhammad Ali. He was at the Rumble in the Jungle. He was at Ali Frazier at Madison Square Garden in 1970. Wow. I mean, the guy, I just grew up thinking I just want to do what he did.
Yeah.
I mean, it was easy. My parents were journalists amazing. As well. But, I mean, the era he lived through was fortunate enough to work on and a very different era to what we're in now. I, as a kid, I used to go and sit. We'd go and stay with my grandparents and I would sit in his study. And of course, everything then was books. You know, his book collection was enormous. And I sat and just read these books and looked at the pictures. And I was just reading about George Foreman, about Bobby Charlton in England, you know. And I mean, he lived an amazing life, professional life, and was just an amazing inspiration.
That's fantastic. I kind of share the same sentiment a little bit. My grandfather's a professional wrestler way back in the day, coming from Italy. And his first ever time coming to the States, he came through Mexico City. They needed somebody to perform at their local fairgrounds. And an American promoter saw him and said, I can get you into America. And said, sign me up. So got him a sports visa. His first ever match was in Amarillo, Texas. And the rest is history. My grandparents met on a blind date in St. Louis, Missouri. And then, now we're here, you know?
That's a beautiful story.
So I can definitely tell that from your perspective, you have countless stories to just recollect throughout your career and just listen to your grandparents.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would just say as well, just quickly, that, you know, the one thing that was wonderful for me was, I mean, this was my grandfather, so there was a distance of age, obviously, between us. But at the very beginning of my professional career, I just managed, obviously, my granddad had long since retired, but I just managed to catch some of his colleagues who were young men when he was nearly at the end of his career. So when I started going into press rooms at, say, Chelsea in 2000, there were one or two of the old guard who'd been young men when my granddad was around. And I was able to meet these people and then report back to my grandfather, who was still alive at the time, and say, you know, I met this guy today and he remembers this. He remembers your trip to Milan. He remembers you being in South America for 3 months on that England tour. And of course, in that era, you know, there was no internet, there were no phones. They could disappear and they'd find a way to get to a phone line, and then they could send in a report. And then, you know, they didn't have that much to do. I think they had some very good times in those days
with, absolutely,
without everybody looking on. Their expense reports were probably quite interesting.
Oh, I'm sure. 100%. Go ahead, Claudia.
Does it ever get old, Tony? Does it ever get old in terms of, I mean, here you are, starting just what, a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, with Apple doing this again. And does it ever get old? I mean, how are the challenges that you face every day? I mean, some people might think, well, I mean, Tony's been doing this long enough to know everything there is to it. No, or is it just a learning experience every single time you come out?
Well, I think you pick up experience along the way that holds you in such good stead as you go forward. And I mean, the torch is just a daft example of that in many ways. Or the flashlight, I should say, to be more American. but I tell you what, you know, and you know, you guys will see it as well. And it's the great thing about sport is that you've never seen it all. You've never seen it all in a soccer game. Something will happen in a soccer game, whether it's this week in Dallas or whether it's in 6 months' time, you know, somewhere else. Something will happen in a soccer game that you think, I haven't seen that happen, or that's a different way of it happening. And that's what keeps us on the edge of our seat. It also means that, you know, you can never be completely comfortable. I mean, as a commentator, I always have those little flutters in my stomach, thinking, am I as prepared as I can be? Yes, I should be. But you never know, something could happen that, you know, you didn't see coming. But that's the great thing about sport. There will always be something that we didn't see coming. And, you know, it also, that keeps you, as I said, it keeps you motivated, keeps you on the edge of your seat. It keeps you prepared.
Yeah. And looking into that, you know, you mentioned keeping the edge on your seat. You look at Nashville SC under BJ Callahan in year two. Obviously, we all saw the transition from the Gary Smith days up to now with BJ Callahan. Did you see this? And did anybody really see this expectation of BJ Callahan baptism by fire with all these players and taking them to the next level?
I think BJ's done a wonderful job. He's come in. I will always, and Claudio, you know, we stood with you at Nissan Stadium at the beginning of Nashville's MLS existence. You know, we've been there since the early days. I will always say a wonderful foundation was laid, for what is now sprouting as an excellent, flower of a tree in terms of what the team has become. I do think some, you know, credit must always go, and history should always remember the role of Gary Smith and what a good foundation he laid for the club. And, you know, I sometimes think on a national scale, I don't think that's always recognized. I think locally it is appreciated around the Nashville area and by fans who followed the journey of the team. But BJ has done a wonderful job, and clearly a great hire to take the club into the next generation. The recruitment, I think the recruiting group have done a wonderful job. Mike Jacobs is once again looks like he's pulled out some absolute gems. You know, we look at the debut of Madrigal, looks like they found a really good player there. And of course, pulling off the signing of Espinoza as a free agent. I mean, in many ways, that is just Mike Jacobs gold. You know, that's the kind of thing he can do. He then brings in Baker Whiting, who again is a very Nashville type of signing. He's given the good tools of the job for BJ to do work with. And right now, you know, we're very early in the season, so you don't want to get too carried away and too excited after three games. But, you know, things look good. Things look very good. You know, they brushed New England aside. New England are not going to be a great side this season, so we shouldn't take too much from that. But still, I think it was a warning shot to the rest of the league that this Nashville side is going to be a good team this year.
Yeah, it's tough to really dissect too much into, I guess, having too much optimism for a side of BJ Callahan's team, because they're they're scoring goals at a high level. I mean, the first match of MLS season, they score 4 goals against New England. You, obviously, Atletico Ottawa, it's a little different, you know, gap. Even the coach for Ottawa even mentioned it. There's a little bit of a competition gap. But, I mean, 7-0 when it comes to the aggregate. I mean, this team is clicking on all cylinders. And again, you have Inter Miami in the second round of the CONCACAF Champions Cup. That will obviously be a tough task. But coming into this weekend, FC Dallas, former Nashville SC right back Shaq Moore, that's a familiar name for this Nashville SC fan base and also this team in general. What do you see the difficult matchups for a team like Nashville and also Dallas?
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting matchup. Dallas got a good start last week. They have a coach in Eric Quill who knows the North Texas scene very well, really wears his heart on his sleeve. When you talk to him, he's very bullish about his team. He feels that that they are building off, obviously, a playoff appearance last year where in the second game, at least, of their series against Vancouver, they pushed them and they nearly took it to a third game. And, of course, Vancouver would ultimately go on to MLS Cup. So, and for me, we're actually across the course of the entire season, February to December, I felt Vancouver were the best team in the league last year, notwithstanding the fact that Miami, you know, won MLS Cup in the end and were the hottest team come the end of the season. Sure. But yeah, we'll see Shaq Moore, who has been converted, it seems, into more of a centre-half than a wing-back. So it'll be a different contrasting styles of the three-man back line that Dallas will play. Dallas are a direct side, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're just going to pump it upfield towards Musa all the time. But they do want to play everything forward, front-facing. They're aggressive. So this will be a good test for Nashville on the road, you know, to be in a different scenario. I mean, the game in Ottawa was something, but this is a different scenario. Up against a fellow MLS team, a team that's won last week, and that's got some, you know, very, very dangerous players. The relationship between Farrington and Musa is something that, you know, Nashville will have spent a lot of time looking at, I'm sure, because those two, they're reading each other well. They combined last week as well. And of course, both got on the score sheet. So that's going to test Nashville's back line. A back line which BJ has already acknowledged, you know, it's new look, and it's probably going to have one or two teething issues at times, who knows. So it should be a good contest.
You know, Nick and Tony, one of the things that caught my attention about Dallas' game, the 3-2 win against Toronto, is what the coaches, Coach Quill said at the end of the whole game and the whole process, when they were tied back 2-2, and then he said he thought about, not tonight. We're going to find our way. So, I mean, I believe that tells how strong mentally this team might be. And I guess, I mean, respecting a better opinion from you two guys, that maybe, I mean, that Nashville is up to the greatest test this season, tomorrow evening in Dallas, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say so. I also picked out on that quote, Claudio. Yeah, I saw that. And you know, I think that is that's Eric Quill down to a T, isn't it? You know, he's going to be very passionate and very, very much hard on his sleeve about his team, believes very strongly in them. I said to him the other day, you know, you have a DP slot still that you can use. They have a few under 22 initiative players as well, part of the roster mechanism. And I said, you know, what are you going to do with that? And he said, well, right now, you know, we want to kind of have it in our back pocket. It's going to be the ace of spades that we might produce later in the season. So I think they're going to go up to this first run and up to the World Cup. And then when there's the break, they're going to look at where they are. But, you know, they are, as I mentioned, bullish on this team. You know, they got seventh in the West last year. Talking to him yesterday, he fully thinks that they can go better.
How different it is, I mean, this is just a question in general that I send here. How different it is, for coaches like Coach Quill and BJ? Because, I mean, I'm glad that Tony brought Gary Smith along just a while ago into the conversation. Because I've always thought that even through the if and buts of Gary's work here in Nashville, he left a very high standard in this team, in this city, on what to expect about it. But he also left a lot of work that of course the institution and BJ is taking care of. When we compare perhaps what's going on here in Nashville and what Coach Quill is doing in Dallas, is that base also present there, or is it a little lower from what BJ found here?
Yeah, I mean, I think Eric, Dallas, it's a difficult one, aren't they? I mean, I think there's a quite inherent difference in the clubs in a sense. I think you think of Dallas and you think of one of the founders of the league and you think of their ownership. And, you know, if it wasn't for their ownership and the Hunt family, you know, the league probably doesn't exist in the format it does today. I mean, these legacy owners and legacy clubs, you know, kept the league alive and when it was on life support, really, at the turn of the century. But people, I think, do look at them and feel, you know, are they shooting for the stars in the same way that some of the newer teams do, who are pushing the envelope a bit more? You know, you look at what the Mas family want to do in Miami. They're not content to win MLS Cup. They want to be the biggest team in the continent. They want to go to the Club World Cup. They're going to spend money, big money, on their roster. And that's not even talking about, you know, the Messi deal. And I think, you know, Nashville fit into that kind of category of ambition, you know, new soccer-specific stadium, riding that wave of soccer in the South and a new market. It feels a bit different when you come to Dallas, in fairness. You know, this is a long-held club and, you know, they've bounced around. They've had bad years. They've had good years. I think the ambition is clearly there to improve, but I do see some kind of differences. But what, of course, Dallas have done very well and where Nashville will look to replicate going forward, and we're starting to see it with one or two of the younger players coming through as well, is Dallas are obviously renowned for bringing through young players. They've invested well in youth down the years. And my goodness, isn't the list long of players who've come through Dallas and are now playing in Europe when you think of the McKennies and the Pepes of this world. And that's just to name just a couple of them. Even in this league, the Jesus Ferreras, who's now in Seattle, you know, they've been a great producer of young talent. And maybe sometimes selling them on when they've sold them has been to the detriment of the first team. That's always the kind of checks and balances that in a tight league that you have to think about. So I do see some differences from two clubs, kind of different places in their existence, different places and times in their histories, I suppose.
Yeah, Tony, you mentioned about some of the young talent there, and one name you already mentioned was Warren Madrigal, who played pretty well in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, and obviously the first match in MLS play. It seems to me, just looking at the way BJ, he has multiple lineups that he can go through. Like the first match in CONCACAF, he had Kasem out left as that attacking midfielder, and then the first match of MLS play, it was Warren Madrigal out there, because I think we all saw in that second half of the CONCACAF match where Warren Madrigal said, hey, I'm going to take this defender head on. And it just showed, he just exuded confidence. And that's something that a lot of Nashville fans haven't seen on both sides of the ball when it comes to flying down the flanks. And my question to you is, should, I guess, Ahmed Kasem be worried about that starting position? I mean, obviously, BJ's mentioned it in previous press conferences, saying everyone's going out there to fight for a competing job. And even a lot of the players are saying that as well. But it just seems to me that that is a position that is very vulnerable right now.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, I think Kasem had a you know, tough first year. He started really well, and then he kind of went off the boil a bit, didn't he? And I think BJ said to us, you know, it was a bit of a baptism of fire, ultimately, adjusting to the league and adjusting to a new country and things. And his positive start kind of just went off a little bit as the year went on. Madrigal's been great. I mean, I'd throw another one in there as well, because I wouldn't underestimate the role of Alex Mouil playing in that kind of tucked-in left side. I mean, for me, Nashville last year were often at their best when Mouil was on the field, even if he wasn't the one who ultimately was getting the glory. He was a really important piece of the puzzle. And you know, away from home, I'd be interested to see, you know, inevitably, you would think at times they might have to be a bit more conservative. Right. So could they sometimes start with Mouil tucked in as a more, you know, solid midfield presence rather than maybe having the two wide men in Espinoza and a Madrigal or a Kasem? But Kasem certainly, yeah, you know, he adds competition to the pool. And, you know, that's the good thing when you look across this team right now. You've got players who you would have expected to be starters who are not starting. You know, Jack Mayer in the back line, you know, has been used to being a starter for the most of the last 3 years, most of the time. And right now, certainly on last week's evidence, you know, he hasn't been a starter in MLS. So it's going to be really interesting. BJ's got some good options across the team.
And you also
talking about that.
Oh, go ahead, Clary.
Talking about that, Tony. You know, even though Walker Zimmerman was not the same last season, of course, that was very evident. The fact of the matter is that there wasn't even But it wasn't also somebody who was going to take the place right away. Just say, well, we're going to sit marketing and start this guy all of our games. But it seems like somehow in just about three games, Maxwell Wuletzi has made us, or many of us, forgetting a little bit of what the presence of Walker Zimmerman was in Nashville. Am I right?
Yes, I think that there's going to be one or two moments where we go, whoa, Maxwell, what are you doing here? I think that's just his nature. And I think BJ's kind of saying, you know, there's a little bit of work to be done. And there's a few things that they want to get right. I mean, Jason Palacios can give us the heart and mouth moments sometimes as well. So I think there are going to be moments where we're going to think, a few years ago, this was Romney, Zimmerman and Willis. Yeah. And now it's Schwaki playing the ball out with his feet. Wuletzi, Palacios, you know, it's going to look different. And it's exciting, but it'll also be, just little moments where, you know, it will be, you know, a contrast with what we've seen. I mean, if I had a slight concern with Zimmerman going, I mean, I completely understand Zimmerman going, you know, that he was a DP and, I mean, he's a warrior and his body is like somebody who's come back from war. I mean, he's been through so many battles in his time. I really hope we see him kind of, get a good run of games in Toronto and prove that he's still got another chapter at the highest level of North American soccer left in him. My concern really was not so much losing Walker in terms of on the field, because, you know, like you said, I think he played maybe 16 games last year. So my concern was, you know, but it's a big presence. You know, in the last couple of years, last 3 years, we've seen the team see Godoy go. We've seen McCarty go. Now Zimmerman, you know, these were big, big characters of the early Nashville 1.0 kind of group. And so I wondered what it would be like losing that voice in the locker room, because BJ's acknowledged you can't replace him with one person, and they're not trying to. And I think that's the smart thing. But certainly so far, you know, you would say they've moved on, and I'm sure they would never go as far as saying, well, Walker who? But, you know, it looks like they are naturally evolving into this next generation of squad. And Zimmerman has, you know, a great place in history, but he's part of that history already.
Yeah, I see where you're coming with that, Tony, because, you know, in years past, you mentioned the Romneys, the Zimmermans, the Joe Willises of the world. They've been the voice of that team from the back outside to the forwards. It seems now that the voice is kind of coming from the central part of the pitch, which is like the Matt Corcorans, the Eddie Tagsets, the Patrick Yazbeks. And again, I'm not saying that Jason Palacios and Maxwell Wuletzi are not leaders out of the back, but it just seems the vocal aspect of this team when it comes to that vocal leadership is not coming from the back right now.
Yeah, that's right. I think, you know, you look at, I think you've got two real charismatic players in the middle of the field in Yazbek and Tagseth, you know, who are not going to be backward in being vocal. And I think the other one as well, I mean, he's grown with every year as, you know, an inspirational leader of this team, you know, but I think the role of Hani Mukhtar is still, it's as important, if not more important than ever. You know, he is now one of the only originals. You know, I think if Nashville line up with anything like what we think they'll line up with in Dallas, you know, you would think tomorrow, you know, obviously Mukhtar would start. Probably Dan Lovitz will play. They will be the only two players from that team in 2020, on that August evening in 2020, when Nashville won its first ever MLS game with the David Akam late goal. You know, so there aren't many voices left from those early days now. And Mukhtar has become an increasingly louder voice within that group and within the locker room, you know, really since probably two seasons in. But I think now, you know, where he is without those older heads there, you know, Mukhtar's importance, it could never be greater.
And sticking with the forwards, Tony, sorry, Claudia. Sticking with the forwards, you look at, you know, a guy like Sam Surridge, who was kind of linked to maybe going back to England this past summer, and Nashville ends up inking him to a long-term deal for the most part. That's got to be a good problem to have if you're a Nashville SC fan, right? The fact that you now have a worldwide presence with your players and they're still performing at a high level.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, Surridge, I saw the reports like you did over the offseason. I think Ipswich, Wolves, teams that, you know, I mean, Wolves have had a great result in the Premier League, but they're not going to stay in the league this season. And Ipswich want to get back there as quickly as they can. So, you know, there'd be attractive propositions for any players. But, you know, it's super then to see Sam Surridge signing his new contract, committing his his future to Nashville. And, you know, he's had a tremendous impact. But, I mean, again, the league just got a warning straight off the bat last week. You know, there he is with a brace on opening night. And, you know, if you keep feeding him in the right way and put him in the best positions to score in MLS, Sam Surridge is going to score a lot of goals.
I mean, we've seen and watched football for many years already, Tony, you yourself for sure. And we know how difficult it is for players to repeat great seasons like Sam had last year and even Mukhtar. I mean, and then the question, two questions here go to, because, I mean, I could talk to you about football all day long, all week long, but I know we have to let you go, and I'll be happy to listen to your call tomorrow. Is it possible for real in the MLS, being as competitive as it is, to have a back-to-back seasons like Sam had it in Mukhtar last season? And the next one, how is it to work? How has it been working with your buddy in crime, Ross, all these games?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, on Hanny and Sam, I think they can. I think, you know, they're still both good ages. You know, I think Hanny's ticked over the other side of 30, or will do in the next few weeks here. But, you know, there's still showing no signs to me that there's any lack of juice in those legs of his. And, you know, I mean, his MVP year, as you both remember, was nothing short of incredible. In fact, it was an 18-month MVP campaign, really, wasn't it? Because it started in June of the year before and carried all the way through to the end of the following season in 2022 in the end. And I think it was inevitable that he might dip a little bit from that. And he had that kind of dip in 23-24. But, you know, last year, excellent again. Yeah. I think Surridge is capable of getting goals, no problem. But the part of it that I don't want to say it takes the pressure off them, because I don't think that's the way they want to look at it or we should look at it. But you throw Espinoza in there as well. Yeah. Who, you know, is more creator than goal scorer. And then suddenly, you know, you've just got a triple threat that is, yeah, there's not many teams in the league that can really say that they've got three.
Yeah. You know, and then Madrigal.
And then throw Madrigal in as well. It's got four. I mean, you know, to be honest with you, we talk about formations all the time. Well, you know, Nashville at their most attacking and best, they're like a 4-2-4, really. You know, when they're flying and in attack. So you know, that's what's going to be exciting about watching this team and joining us on Apple TV to see the games. And on Apple TV, I have my pal Ross, who, you know, I can't speak highly enough of. You know, the guy is...
I love Ross. I love it.
It's just incredible preparation, brings ideas, brings tremendous focus to every game that we do. You know, and is just a great teammate. I mean, the great thing with co-commentators often is that they've often played the game and been players themselves, and obviously in Ross's case have been. And with that means that they're used to being good teammates and good team players. I've often seen that with my co-commentators when I've been in the booth. You know, they are selfless because they know what it's like. They know that a team performs at its best when it works together. And the same for Jamie Watson, who, you know, I had such a wonderful time with in the booth when we did the Nashville broadcast as well. So, yeah, it's great to work with them. And, you know, Ross will be, you know, the most prepared co-commentator again tomorrow night as we head into doing FC Dallas against Nashville.
Absolutely.
We're going to have to win it. We need to try to have him here as well, Nick.
Yeah, get him. Let's get him. Yeah.
For sure. Tony, I had a quick one for you before we let you go. Just looking, and you mentioned about Mike Jacobs, the roster construction of this Nashville SC team. I find it very interesting in a year of the World Cup, and now that Nashville is qualified for CONCACAF Champions Cup and Leagues Cup, which will resume in August, obviously. It's a very congested schedule. But for Nashville, the way this roster is constructed, it's a lot of young players that are probably not going to get call-ups to that national level. I think one guy you could probably say would be Patrick Gazbeck for Australia. But minus that, a lot of other guys are not going to get called up because either their country's not in the World Cup and or they're just too young. Mm. So, again, I feel like that bodes well for a roster like Nashville because they can rest their legs in that downtime and then ramp it right back up for another run at Leagues Cup.
Yeah, that's true. I think the only inherent problem with that, and you've just hit the nail on the head, Nick, is that not many of them are going to be going to the World Cup. Now, they're not going to have 2 months off, obviously.
Right.
But they are going to have 2 months without playing competitive league games. So actually, I'm thinking in it, that's a bit of a headache in some ways, I think, for a lot of these coaches who are not going to be seeing lots and lots of players going off and playing high-end games. So I'd be fascinated to know what the kind of strategy is going to be. I think effectively, a lot of these clubs are going to do another preseason, which prepares them well for what's coming next year when the season changes anyway. So, you know, that's not necessarily an ideal problem to have. The bonus, of course, Nick, as you rightly say, is it should ensure that, injuries aside, that this is a team that's got a lot of, you know, juice in its legs as it goes through Leagues Cup and then into the fall. And as we all know, you know, it's about who's being hot in October and November and into December, isn't it? You know, if you're talking MLS Cup, that's when you've got to be absolutely on it and at your best. So I think a lot of, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see what it's like when the league resumes around that World Cup semi-final time.
Yeah, you make a good point. Looking last season when they had that exhibition match against Aston Villa, to me, I looked at that as a preseason match because of that time they had off from that, I guess, in between, I think it was like a two-week period. To me, it looked like it was for more of BJ getting reps for those guys to just ramp it back up again.
Yeah, I think that, and we'll probably see that. I mean, I haven't, the European teams, obviously, a lot of them are going to be more impacted by players being away at the World Cup. But still, there'll be a lot of clubs. I would suspect we'll see the Premier League teams start to come over to the US. Not just Premier League, of course, but, you know, La Liga teams and things, and German teams come over as well. But you know, we do see a lot of English teams come over every summer. I'm sure we'll see that. The question is whether the timing fits, because they might want to come over just in that window after the World Cup's finished, before their European seasons begin. I wonder whether we may see some teams come over a little earlier that have maybe half or two thirds of their squads that they need to do preseason work with. But I think, you know, and you're probably going to see a lot of scrimmages behind closed doors during that 2 months, where MLS teams will probably play each other as well, just to keep people fresh.
Yeah. And one more thing before I let you go. Sorry, Claudio. When you look at your career as a broadcaster, what's that one bucket list thing you got to check it off?
I want to know the goals too. What's the best goal you ever watched?
The best goal I've ever seen?
Yeah.
Crikey. Well, I do you know what? I was just reading, funny enough, so I'm working on the World Cup this summer, which will be, you know, tremendously exciting. So I was reading a World Cup book on the plane down, reading a story of somebody who's been to the last 9 World Cups. And he was telling the story of Michael Owen's goal against Argentina in the 1998 World Cup, England-Argentina, where England got knocked out on penalties. I mean, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, that's one of the best goals I've ever seen. Sure. Paul Gascoigne, Euro 96 against Scotland, one of the best goals I've ever seen. But I really ought to think and have a good answer prepared for that question, because it's a good question and I haven't got a kind of go-to answer on that one. So that's a good point.
Indeed.
We'll hear your answer in the near future for sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
Señoras y señores, Tony Husband, you want to listen to him tomorrow night doing with the call FC Dallas versus the Nashville Soccer Club from Toyota Stadium. Thank you so much, Tony.
Great to be with you, fellas.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Tony. Have a good call tomorrow.
Cheers.
That was Tony Husband. How about that, Claudio Villalobos? Unbelievable. I feel like I could go on for days with a guy like that. I mean,
oh, man, you know,
he has countless stories, man. And again, he mentioned his stories about, you know, his grandfather being in the business. And to me, I just gravitated towards that because, you know, my connection with my grandfather as well, he was in the sports industry. And that just kind of, that's where I gravitated towards it. It's just
You wouldn't believe it, Nick, but as soon as he started telling that fun story, I was thinking about you.
Oh, well.
And I'm happy you brought it along, because when you told me that the first time we ever met, I thought it was the most incredible stories I ever heard from anybody coming into the U.S. And that was great. I mean, seeing that his grandfather was still calling games. But when was the last time he said?
When he was, what, in his 9 years old, right? He said something like that when he's a grandkid, yes. Again, he had some good insight about this Nashville club going up against a team like FC Dallas. And he made a good point, too, that I remember. He said, when Nashville's clicking on all cylinders, they're almost like a 4-2-4, which is very true. Like, they are pretty well-packed when it comes to offensive attack. You always have your – and again, he made a good point about Alex Moyle. That guy has like nine lungs, like we've always talked about. He is always at the top level. But again, if you have a guy,
Alex Moyle, we talked about it, Nick. Alex Moyle's not even worried about his position.
Oh yeah,
he's not. It's his to lose.
Yeah,
he's gonna give you 110, 200, 500% every single game, every single time he comes in. And we saw it again on the last game. He was pretty close to Corcoran being the best two players in the field for sure, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Yeah, and one thing that we obviously are going to speak on now, it's the fact that I mentioned to Tony at the beginning of the episode there is about Ahmed Kasem, how viable and but vulnerable that position is, that left attacking mid role. I just look at it as a Warren Madrigal, Ahmed Kasem 1-2 punch. Again, don't forget about Alex Moyle. I get all that. But watching that second leg of the CONCACAF Champions Cup at Geodis Park, to me, seeing Ahmed Kasem in a more central role, and I remember telling you this when they first, grabbed Ahmed Kasem from transfer, was that I think he could play in that holding, attacking mid-role that Hani's playing in right now, kind of fitting right behind a Sam Surge. And again, we kind of saw that a little bit this past Tuesday when Ruben Patius was playing up top, more receiving the ball back to goal, and then you had Ahmed Kasem kind of floating in that pocket right underneath him. And I think that's a good spot to have him because you're still going to have that overlapping run of the midfielder on the left flank.
I agree. And when even BJ mentioned that he made a tactical switch there to bring him along internally, and that made him switch, look a lot better because he looked like there were more surrounded support around him that helped make him look a lot better. Right. Now, one thing I see, and we've talked about it before with Kasem, is that whenever the other team is stronger, which all of them are going to be stronger than Atletico Ottawa for sure, then that what he lacks is that he gets lost in between the dynamics of playing defense also and going back forward. That back and forth is what he still doesn't manage well enough. You mentioned that the other night, and that's what really he gets lost, because when he's very capable of going forward for sure. Three quarters of the fill up. He's one of the best players perhaps that the team has. But when he needs to get involved, perhaps helping
defensively, dropping back in the midfield.
Dropping back a little bit. That's when he starts having an issue, because the distance in between the two play, the place he likes to play and going backwards and forth, that's what really kind of wears him out, and he doesn't look the same.
Yeah, and again, when he's in possession of the ball, he looks like a confident player. It's just more of when you get into that attacking third, that final attacking third, that's where he has a little bit of an issue.
For sure. I mean, tomorrow is a game that, and it's probably, like I said, said Tony, it's probably one of those games that where Nashville probably be tested the most.
Oh, yeah.
Because not only playing there, but this team that is coming along well with Coach Quill. But not only that, I mean, tomorrow we'll probably start seeing, the type of game or the players that are really going to claim the spot. Because I still believe, no matter, we've seen a lot of stuff happening on this team, Nick, we've talked about it, where different guys are starting in different positions for either the CONCA Champions and the first MLS game. But I mean, my opinion has always been one. There is not two 11 starters on a team ever. I don't care what you're talking about. Perhaps a national team, one of the biggest ones like Brazil, Argentina, France, one of those. But in regular teams, there is always that 11 and then the supporting cast. So I think tomorrow we're going to start seeing more of that, if not. And I hope I'm wrong, though. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm wrong, because if I'm wrong, that means that BJ has gotten close to actually having those, I'm going to say 14, 15, 16 players mm-hmm. that are just as good, no matter who starts.
Yeah, and again, Tony made a lot of really good points. Another one that I want to highlight is the fact that Musa on FC Dallas, he's going to attack that back line. I think this is, again, this will be the biggest test so far this season for Nashville when it comes to their center backs. You're going to get some difficult matchups. You're going to get some runs in from behind the center backs. They're going to make some diagonal runs because, again, this is a FC Dallas team. Again, he even mentioned it about Shaq Moore. He's playing more in a attacking role. It's not just your traditional right back position. He's more up there in the forwards position. And, again, you look at that and say, that's a 3-5-2 that FC Dallas is very competitive with. That tells me a system under BJ Callahan, if you're running a 3-5-2, you're going to tighten that block, that middle defensive block. You're going to make that very difficult to find a passing lane for. So if I'm BJ Callahan in that Nashville SC lineup, I could see a guy like Matthew Corcoran starting. The reason being, and the reason why I say this, is because of the performance he had in the second leg of the CONCACAF Champions Cup. That ball that he put to Jordan Knight that he ended up scoring, he put two of those. The first one went out of bounds, obviously a little too far. But again, that's how you're going to get past this three at the back, is because those right and left flanks are going to be exploited so much. Because if FC Dallas is pushing a high line, there's going to be some room behind that. And again, you want to have your fastest players out there, like a Warren Madrigal and a Christian Espinoza. I think that's where you got to look at it from a tactical standpoint of, if you're going to put Espinoza out there, which you probably will, you're going to have to put more vanilla on the ball, a little bit more flavor on the ball. You know what I'm saying?
I agree. I mean, you know, when you look at two things right there with the, what you're saying, when you look, you mentioned Chuck, coming in farther up in the field. And that really brings me, well, besides the fact that I believe, and we agree on this, Waring is taking that place for himself in terms of starting the lineup. The fact that Shaq is doing that for Dallas, going up front, it will not be a good fit for Kassem to be in there, because that's going to cause a lot of problems on that side for Dan Lovitz, for sure. So it's going to be, can actually run with him, somebody young, where Warren can do it, he'll do it. And then on the other stuff that you're talking about, Matthew Corcoran, we always liked him anyways, but it only took him about 20 minutes before he set his feet on the ground and he started quarterbacking the team back and forth. Mm-hmm. I mean, and what I love about him is not only those long passes like he did to Jordan to score, but also the fact that he's got that sight, you know, like a, you know, like a submarine. He's looking around. He knows where everybody's in the field. He watches it behind himself. I mean, that kind of performance for this young kid. We should never forget. He's a kid. Yeah. And he does. He plays like a veteran already in this team. That's why. And I love to see him playing like that, because then we've seen what happens. We've seen the best of Jaspik at this point, didn't we? In that particular game, Jaspik played. I told him the question I asked. I thought it was the best game that Patrick Jaspik has ever had for Nashville. And at the same time, what we've seen, he even said it today in the press conference, Eddie Tagset. Well, Eddie decided to get into the inside the box too.
Yeah.
All of that is causing this type of stuff that is helping the team so much, and also making BJ look like a genius, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But the players are there. They're making up stuff. And if we... I mean, if we talk about Eddie, for instance, Nick, that guy runs like crazy all day long, and now he's running even harder because he wants to be in the box and come back to defend.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's a guy that carried a lot of miles last season for MLS play, especially for Nashville. I mean, going back to Corcoran real quick, and you make a good point about just him checking his shoulder before the pass is even received to him. That is something a veteran technical midfielder does. And again, I think that you got to give credit to the amount of experience he received last season under BJ Callahan. Again, I'm going to say the phrase again, baptism by fire. When they needed him the most, it was in the first match of the season. Meyer and Matthew Corcoran in the midfield. And you're just thinking, man, what is this BJ Callahan team going to look like going forward? And again, they showed up to the occasion, and they got the job done for the most part. We even saw in the latter half of the season for Nashville, Corcoran played a little bit of left back. Let's not forget that. When they needed a left back because Taylor Washington was out and Daniel Lovitz was playing a lot of minutes, they needed a guy like Matthew Corcoran to sit back a little bit and play left back. I just think the versatility of this one player, it just goes to show you he can play a six, he can play an eight, he can play wherever you need him to in the midfield. And again, that just more credit to BJ, because again, you focus on, again, this is elementary soccer, what I'm about to describe, but you have a lot of young players. Make sure your first touch is pristine, because that first touch it matters for everything. And I think that cannot be stressed enough in this system, because BJ requires a lot out of these players. And if your first touch is not there, you're not going to do anything in this system.
I believe tomorrow, again, I'm just kind of retaking my words of earlier. Yeah. We're going to need to see the best Nashville that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
And that's a lot to say, because I mean, we have to be honest. Atletico Ottawa is not the rival that will make any team shine even better. But and we already talked about it as well. Tony said it very well. I mean, New England is not going to be that team either this season in the MLS, yeah, for sure. So the best game for that Nashville has played, if we combine everything together, it might not be enough tomorrow, Nick. It might not be enough tomorrow. So tomorrow, if Nashville wins, which I think they could, why not? No problem. They have a lot of problems, but they could win. The best game Nashville needs to play tomorrow, and if they win tomorrow in a good way, tomorrow will be already, I can tell, the best game of the season for this team so far.
Yeah, 100%. I'm more looking at it from the defensive perspective, because we're going to, if this is the pairing tomorrow, Maxwell Wolitzy and Jason Palacios, and if that is the center back pairing, that and they end up, again, if this team can get a shutout against an FC Dallas team that put up 3 goals against Toronto from last weekend, that to me is probably the biggest accomplishment of the season so far. And again, you hit the nail on the head with the assessment of tomorrow's match. But again, if they get a shutout and Brian Chwaki looks really good, makes a save or two, and in a very critical point of the game, this just goes to show you the leadership and what is developing for leadership that is out of the back.
Brian Chwaki is a stingy goalkeeper.
Yeah, and again,
he won't allow anything.
Another point that I'll highlight from Tony is the way Brian Chwaki plays the ball at his feet. Again, we saw that last season with Joe Willis and how he was able to develop that, you know, kind of teaching an old dog new tricks a little bit. But with he looked pretty good, right? I mean, but Brian Chwaki this year, I love the off the ball movement. That's what I'm most, I guess, impressed about, I guess you could say, is sure, when he passes the ball off to either a Daniel Levitz or a Andy Nahar or to a Jason Palacios, and they end up, you know, accelerating the pass even further up the field, I call it shadow boxing a little bit, because his off the ball movement, he's at the top of the 18, and he's moving along with the right flank of where the ball is at, or the left flank of the ball. Again, that's what a goalkeeper does to keep his line and so forth. But it's almost like he is an extra defender waiting for a pass to come back to him and just anticipating. The anticipation of his position has evolved. And again, it's not your traditional goalkeeper that stays on his line 24/7.
You know, there was one play that we all remember from last game with Guletzi. I took that ball from everywhere, from box to box.
Yeah.
That was a great show right there for the fans to see it at Jody's Park. But one thing that I still haven't seen yet, and not because they cannot do it, or he, especially Guletzi, I'm sure he can. But the fact that Patrick Jaspic is playing the way he is, coming all the way to this side of the field just to pick up play and start building up in transition, that really hasn't been able, that hasn't allowed either Budetsi and
Palacios
to start doing that, because I mean Jasmine doesn't let him.
Yeah,
is that fair?
Yeah, it's very fair. And again, I think the ideology behind bringing in a guy like Jason Palacios and Maxwell Wolitzy, one was just closing down the small spaces. I think we saw that with Palacios last season and developing into this season. The way he's able to close down space so quickly, that is the biggest pro to his game. And then
way they both go to the flank in a hurry.
Correct, yeah. The way they go to the flank and come back pretty quickly. And again, you look at a guy like Wolitzy, and I'd say when they're in attack, like when they're going to a set piece, like a corner kick or something like that, that's where I see Wolitzy being the most impactful offensively. Yeah. And again, that's for every center back. But last season, we saw it with Walker Zimmerman, whereas if he was going up for the ball in the box, he'd win those aerial duels if that is the case. But again, it's a one-man wrecking crew going back. It's just Palacios. We've seen it this year so far with the pairing of Wolitzy and Palacios. They go in the box and they try to win their aerial duels off the corner kick and they don't get it. Guess what? They're both hauling way back to the defensive zone at the same time. And again, it takes two to tango, and they're both going back there at the same time. I think that's a huge plus to this season so far in the defensive side of the ball.
Nick, it helps a lot when you have a guy like the Milkman playing perhaps his best soccer ever.
I mean, the guy scored a goal in the CONCACAF Champions Cup second leg.
I mean, if they know that if they go dormant, the Milkman is ready. I mean, Jack Mayer is playing well. I mean, really, I have to say it. Not only, I mean, whatever you say, I mean, and I said it a couple of times already, Ottawa wasn't that the rival that you expect, but still, you still need to show up, and he did big time. Jack really showed, and he showed that he can also be the captain of the team, which is nice to see it.
Yeah, It's his seventh season for being a Nashville SC player, and the fact that it was his second time ever being a captain of this team is a big a testament to his game, because it shows that he has diligence in his game to just be a leader, not even with the captain's armband on. Again, he scored a goal in the second leg of the CONCACAF Champions Cup match here at Geodis Park this past Tuesday. We had him on last Friday on 102.5 The Game. I don't know if you were able to listen to that or not, or go back and listen to it, but he was very detailed with the way, you know, his style of play has changed under BJ, just the way, you know, he's been asked a lot from BJ Callahan just to, you know, step it up if that is the case. And he's stepped up to the occasion. Again, it's his seventh year. He doesn't have Walker Zimmerman to lean on. And I think for him being that, I guess, far off in his career, it goes to show you that he can take that next level without a guy like Walker Zimmerman.
How about Reed?
I was impressed. Baker. I was impressed with Reed Baker-Whiting. Again, that is... I see the trajectory of a player like him for Nashville, because everybody knows last season, a lot of the offensive attack ran through the right flank with Andy Nahar. And if it was Jacob Schaffelberg or whoever else was up there at that right attacking mid role, they'd have that overlapping run. And Daniel Lovitz would kind of just sit back at the midline of the field, midfield. And it'd be like, let's say Palacios, Lovitz, and maybe, you know, whoever else, maybe it was Walker or Jack, whoever it was, it would kind of be a three at the back, and it would be that right back of Nahar in just entertaining the idea of going forward into that attacking third, and you'd have just a clump of players, and then the cycle would then continue, and they would cycle the ball. Whereas this year, it's a little different. I think we've seen the adjustment of a guy like, we've seen the adjustment of a guy like Daniel Lovitz, where he played a lot of minutes last season, but now we're seeing them even out the distribution of the ball, where it's not all on the right flank. It's now starting to come on the left flank a little bit. And I think with a guy like Reed Baker-Whiting, you're able to see the just even distribution now. The guy can go up the field, kind of the same thing with Maxwell Wolitzi. He can go up the field, but then come back immediately. That's, again, a young player who has fresh legs, and a guy like Reed Baker-Whiting, if that is the case for Nashville, if they were to play, let's say, Daniel Lovitz to 65th minute, then you make a substitution and say, oh, Reed, fresh legs, and he can do whatever Nahar can do on the opposite side of the ball.
I mean, it's amazing to talk about guys like Lovitz, because Lovitz, like he always says, he's a very, very honest guy when he talks about himself, when he's done in the league and the team. But it's amazing to see a guy like Lovitz that, besides the fact that he's not giving up any position, any minutes, he won't at all. The fact that you see him now building that easy transition that maybe was a little harder at the beginning for him, we only see him in a very competitive game, which is against New England, but we've seen him in practice, and he looks a lot different. He looks a lot different even before Reed Baker-Whiting came aboard, and now he's going to be even better, I believe. Because having somebody pushing you in the back, that not, knowing you that this guy is good enough to replace you in the starting lineup, that's something that a guy like Lovitz takes it. He's happy about it. He's happy about it because he likes to be pushed.
Yeah,
I, that's the way I see it. The way I talk, you know, whenever I talk to him and everything, he likes to be pushed, and now he knows he's gonna be pushed as far as he can go. And he said it the other day. I think it was Valer, the one that asked him about the fact that he was going to be looking for to head balls inside the box there, and you know, he said, yeah, because I found out that's fun, that's nice. So I mean, that's something that you could say, well, it's really amazing to see guys like this who's been in the league for a while is still at this point saying there is something else to accomplish, there's something else that I can do to help this team, and I'm going to do it no matter what. I mean, that's awesome. And you know, Reed, he's a young guy, he's got everything going for him, he's going to be for here or whatever he wants for a long time. He'd probably be a player in the national team for sure. I mean, I see it that way. So what do you think is going to happen tomorrow then, Tim? I mean,
tomorrow for the selection?
And teams are not only about what we're talking about tactically and what BJ was saying, but is this going to be one of those games where Nashville actually sets up another level of play in order to beat Dallas at home? or is it going to be a play, one that could probably land everybody in his feet and say, well, hold on, not so fast, buddies?
Yeah, I don't think it's a game that would, I mean, it could humble them in that case. It could humble them. I look at this game as more of a, is Nashville legit? Are they legit in a top, like looking from the top five in, or maybe the top eight in? Are they a legit team? And again, this is the first test of the season for them. Now, as for a projected lineup tomorrow, Claudio, I'll start from the back. I think Brian Schwaki gets the start and goal. And then you look at center backs. I think Wolitzki and I take it back. Palacios and maybe Mayer. I'm more leaning towards Wolitzki because just, again, you make a good point about Mayer. He's playing really good soccer right now to the point where, yeah, maybe you give him a suggestion of you might start. I don't know. Again, the depth in this team is maturing as the season progresses. There is depth to choose from it, which is something we haven't heard from a Nashville team in years past. But as for tomorrow, I'll just go with Wolitzki, Palacios, Nahar on the right, Levitz on the left. In the midfield, here's the surprise. I'm going to go Tagseth and Corcoran in the midfield. And then I'm going to go Espinoza, Hani, Sam, and I'm going to go Mule. Alex Mule.
Mule.
Yeah.
All right. I'm taking probably the same starting lineup against New England. I think I would agree with you as much as I like Matthew Corcoran, and I know he'd be a great. Well, he's always been a great fit, anyways.
Right.
Nothing wrong will happen if he comes if he starts the game at all. Probably many positive things, but the way that Patrick Jaspic has been playing. And I only say it this way, even when he underperformed somehow or some in the game, BJ still trusted him. Now he trusts him even more because he's actually playing his best soccer ever.
Yeah.
And of course, we don't see Eddie Taxet going anywhere.
Sure.
And Warren Madrigal is just taking over that position. He's there to lose.
Yeah.
Of course, as soon as he doesn't do something right, that you know, Muel is coming along. And of course, in the front, I've seen again Mokhtar and Sam, but Bezos is right there.
Yeah, I don't think he's
now. We have somebody who will just, hey, coming in, and he's going to be real good.
Yeah, a good point with Ruben Bezos. He's played pretty well for this team. He has two goals and two starts. I mean, that's something that.
He knows how to score.
He has a nose for goal. I mean, that's all you got to do. There's a magnet on his foot, and the other magnet's in the back of the net. So he knows where to aim, and it just goes directly on net. Another thing that you made a good point about, and again, the reason why I left it as an open door for a projected lineup on Corcoran and Mayer potentially is because before the second leg of the CONCACAF Champions Cup, I asked BJ Callahan about Warren Madrigal. And ask him about, you know, what could there be, you know, talking about lineups and so forth.
Right.
Could he potentially be somebody you take from the bench because of his time, you know, the first, you know, MLS game? And he goes, well, dude, he didn't say dude, excuse me. Let me rephrase that. He said it in a more professional manner, but
We do say dude, though.
In a roundabout way. But no, he just kind of phrased it in the point of, if you're hot, you're hot. You know, and again, if you got the hot hand right now, then continue playing that player. And again, he's a young player too. Warren Madrigal is a young player. I mean, he has the experience from the La Liga sector of it all, coming back and playing for Saprissa and then now playing for Nashville. There is a grit. You talk about BJ grit. It was in your latest article.
BJ grit.
I think Madrigal, he exudes that. He has that grit himself.
I mean, you know, one of the amazing thing about Warren Madrigal, and it's kind of interesting that we're already talking about him, but only with two games that he's played coming from, he's so early, it's early yet.
Yeah.
But remember we talked about it, and we even asked a question to BJ about what he coming in here for? He said, well, he's going to be a striker for me. He's going to be a striker, which means he's going to be even playing for, instead of a Mukhtar or Sam, mm-hmm. for sure, being in the bench. I'm not sure. I think Warren didn't like that, really. I mean, I'm just trying to set up my mind in between his.
Yeah.
And Warren didn't like that. He said, wait a second. No, I want to play more. I'm going to show this guy that I can play more anywhere he plays me. And all of a sudden, BJ is playing him where he never planned to play him to begin with.
Yeah. And again,
well, I mean, that's amazing when a young player like him.
Yeah, and it opens up the opportunity for a guy like Ahmed Kasem to maybe kind of slide into a different role. And maybe if it is on the left attacking mid, then that's great. But I see him as more of a central threat. I really do. Like a depth piece for a guy like Hani Mukhtar. That's where I see Ahmed Kasem. Again, you could say he plays well on the left side and he's able to cut in and get that Tiro shot that into the back of the net if that is the case for him. But again, not trying to discredit his play.
Do you see Mukhtar coming out? And
no.
Kasem going in?
No. I don't. I don't think that's the way it'll be. I'm just saying for a depth purpose. Because let's be honest, Claudio, this starting 11 right now is strong and deep.
It is.
Where a guy like Ahmed Kasem is, I'm not saying his name is falling down the list here, but he's got to find a spot, and he's got to find a spot quick.
Now, if he takes it the right way, it's going to be awesome for him.
Oh, yeah,
he's
absolutely.
He's going to become a way better player.
And
if he takes it the right way.
I'm sure people listening live or on the podcast version is the Talking Coucho podcast. You can catch on the Game National Sports Network. But I don't want it to be taken out of context where Ahmed Kasem is a terrible player. He's not a terrible player at all.
No,
I mean, he scored a goal in the second leg of the CONCACAF Champions Cup to the point where he showed off his, you know, his skills, and he just dribbled around the goalkeeper, dribbled around a defender, and flicked it on the outside of his boot into the back of the net. Like, again, that is some technical skill if I've ever seen it. I know I probably can't do that at that level.
We talked about it. When you score the best goal of the night, being the fifth goal,
yeah,
that's got to be amazing.
Exactly. Exactly. And followed up behind Jordan Knight's goal as well. Like, all these guys are playing at a high level. And again, I don't want to discredit his play at all. I just think there is a true competition for guys on this team right now. And even BJ mentioned it at the post-match press conference against Atletico Ottawa in that second leg. Everybody's fighting for a spot every single week. And
he said it again today.
Yeah.
He said it again today.
I think he's going to continue stressing that, just like the way he stressed the identity of this club in the, I guess, NSC chapter 1.0. This is, or 2.0, excuse me. Everyone attacks, everyone defends. This year, that's the motto. The motto is everybody's fighting for a starting spot. That's the motto, because everybody now understands the baseline of what NSC 2.0 is. Now it's 2.1. 2.1 is time to fight for a spot.
I'll call it from now on BJ Grit 2.
There you go. The BJ Grit 2. There you go. Love that. Anything else we're forgetting, Claudio?
Well, there's one last topic, but before we talked about it, what about a score for tomorrow?
Oh.
We always do.
Yeah.
We always do.
Ooh, I'm going to go 2-0 Nashville. I think they need a shutout, a clean sheet. One, it would give the confidence a little stronger for Brian Schwaki, give confidence to that back line, especially the two center back pairings. This is, again, a vital game to where they can start building chemistry between one another, Wolitzki and Palacios. Also, you could bring Schwaki into that combination as well. You got to have a trifecta there. But if they can start building strong chemistry and collecting some clean sheets here and there, that is a strong force to not mess with. So I'm going to go 2-0. My goal scorers, I'll go Surge for one. And then a little bit of a wild card spot, Espinoza.
Well, that's good to me. Now, I love your score better than mine.
Mm.
I'll tell you right now. But I just see too difficult. It's going to be very difficult for Nashville to keep Dallas off the score sheet.
Yeah.
So 2-1 is mine. 2-1 in mind, and I go again with Sam. Sam is always scoring. And I mean, I'm going to take the easy route this time. Mukhtar.
Oh, from the penalty spot, or is just an open play?
Open play.
Okay.
Both open play.
Yeah. I see a 3-5-2 formation, Claudio, a little bit difficult for a team like Nashville to where those diagonal balls that we saw in against New England, I think we'll see a little bit of that tomorrow night.
It's going to be a good game.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good game. Now, the last topic I have that I just brought is the big news in this city today about Japan's choosing Nashville to be the headquarters.
That's right.
For the World Cup. I mean, that cannot be overseen, not even a bit, that a team like Japan or any other team in the World Cup will take our city like a place where they think they're going to feel as a home and ready to do everything they have. I'm hoping now that they go a long way in the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, that's kudos to Nashville for allowing them to use their facilities for the time being when it comes to the FIFA World Cup this summer. I chuckle because we all know the outskirts of the training grounds of Nashville SC. It looks sure. like fast food alley. You got every single fast food restaurant you can name. I mean, you got your Whataburgers, your In-N-Outs, your Chick-fil-A's. Like, you have every single fast food option right outside the facility. And if I'm a guy that plays for Team Japan, I would be tempted. I could see them being a little sluggish when it comes to playing in their first match when it comes to the FIFA World Cup.
Now, if you're in our audience tonight and you've never seen Japanese people or many Japanese people, get ready. They're coming.
Yeah.
They're coming. They like to follow their players. They like to follow their team, the national team for sure. They call it the Samurai Blue.
Mm-hmm.
The Samurai Blue. They're followers. They're big time fans. I mean, you'll see them in the city. They're going to be flooding the city for sure. That's what I see. That's what I predict. And, well, we better start getting our sushi ready.
I think there's, hey, I just had sushi tonight. It was pretty good. Again, I think a lot of soccer fans, just average soccer fans, the average Joe of the world, they don't understand what the United States is about to experience. There is going to be a sea of just different colors of every single nation in the world. And again, kudos to that. Obviously, there is going to be a lot of security on hand because a lot of these games, I'm not saying they get out of hand, but just there is just a massive magnitude when it comes to games like this, especially at this level. I'm still waiting for Italy to make the World Cup. Just holding out for that. They just unveiled their 1990 kit. They're bringing that back. So if they make the World Cup, that would be a huge, huge feature. I would love to see
that.
This
is so huge that I have a personal experience from my homeland. When Costa Rica made it to the now we're talking Italy 90, Italy 90, that one of the best World Cups ever been, and they were in, they finally decided. Of course, teams visit different cities, and they said, I can't remember right now the name of the city in Italy that they decided to make their headquarters. People fell in love with the national team in such a crazy way. They named streets Costa Rica and whatever else. Both of the cities became sister cities right off the bat. I mean, that was just, I'll probably bring the name later on one of our shows, but that was just something different at all levels. For those guys, for those people to have a national team that qualified for the World Cup to choose their city, it was, I mean, the best thing that happened to them in a century. Well, I'm not going to say that's the best thing that happened to this big city on a century, but it's going to be quite huge. It's going to be big, like you said, Nick.
Yeah, I think you're referring to when Costa Rica won 1-0 in the Stadio Luigi Ferraris, which is iconic stadium in all of Italy. Uh-huh. Genoa right now, they're struggling. They're in Serie D.
Don't remind me that because I probably start crying.
Yeah, I know. They're in Serie D right now, and hopefully Genoa can kind of resurge their way back to the top to Serie A because that's a derby that a lot of people miss, and that's Sampdoria versus Genoa, and that's one of the greatest of all derbies in all of Italy, and we need that back.
They beat Sweden 2-1 right there in the same stadium.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I keep forgetting about that too.
I mean, that was great.
So again, I think a lot of people are going to really get a big taste of World Cup soccer at a very quick pace. So I'm excited for it. Let's also not forget Spain. They're in Chattanooga. They're at Baylor, the boarding school. I'm very familiar with that school because I played at Father Ryan football and soccer. We traveled up there multiple times, and it's a beautiful facility. And again, I understand why Spain is training in Chattanooga because it's secluded. It's away from a lot of things. They have trees that kind of, you know, cover everything. You can't really see the street. They just want to be, you know, away from everything where they can kind of focus.
Wasn't that the time that Father Ryan went over there and you had to score a penalty kick and you missed it and you didn't qualify? No.
Yeah, well, let's put it this way, Claudio. I had one goal to my name when I played at Father Ryan. So I played left back. I was more of a defender. Yeah.
I made it all up.
It's all right. I will say, when I played in junior high, like the 7th and 8th grade, I was more of like a 9. I played up top. But I fell kind of into the midfield a little bit. It was a lot of fun. I miss playing those days. I still play from time to time. Not too bad, but getting a little off the rails here. But hey, I always enjoy this. You get the video version of this, the Tuego Nuestro Pasón podcast. Did I say that properly, Claudio?
Well, Nuestro Juego. No, what's that?
Did I say it properly? Tuego Nuestro Pasión podcast?
Tu juego nuestra pasión.
Look at that. I'm learning Spanish, boys and girls.
Our game, your passion.
I'm getting there. You can get the video podcast of that on all your platforms. And you can get the audio podcast, which is the Talking Calcio podcast from hosted from yours truly, Nick Frazier, Dr. Crane, along with Claudio Villalobos from Nashville Total Sports. You can get that on the Game Nashville Sports Network. So this has always been a lot of fun. We'll continue to do this throughout the season. Claudio, we'll, I guess, react to all the big soccer stuff tomorrow evening after the match, huh?
We will.
Okay. Folks, appreciate Sayonara. You joining in. We'll see you.
See you like from now on. Sayonara.
All right. Ci vediamo presto.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.